Docket number 82797, Ceballos v. Empey Palace. Counsel, you ready to proceed?
Yes.
All right, come on up. Would you like to reserve any time? I'm sorry? Okay.
May I proceed, Your Honor?
Yes, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chief Justice. Good afternoon, Justices. May it please the Court. My name is Andre Lago-Marcino, and I represent the appellant, Danny Ceballos. Also attending in court today and observing is our law clerk from our firm, Taylor Jorgensen, who has just graduated from law school as of this past Friday.
Congratulations.
She also assisted in writing the briefs.
Is she related to Eric Jorgensen? No. Okay.
The parties both agree that today's case presents matters that involve questions of first impression involving the common law and matters raising a principal issue of statewide importance. The parties also agree that this case is before the court on a de novo review of the court's granting, the lower court's granting of a motion to dismiss. Having stated what the parties agree to, there are legal issues on which the parties do not agree. Whether the district court erred in finding that marijuana use does not constitute lawful use of a product pursuant to NRS 613.333, whether the district court erred in interpreting NRS 678.8D.510 to supersede appellant's rights under 613.333, whether the complaint states a claim for tortious discharge predicated on a violation of the right to privacy, and if the complaint does not, should leave be granted to amend in this case. Appellant believes all the answers to those questions are yes. Respondent believes the answers are no. Much of this case hinges on the meaning of words contained in the Nevada Revised Statutes and the interpretation and construction of those words. To quote philosopher Thomas Nagel, what does it all mean? What does the phrase in this state mean, as set forth in NRS 613.333? Does it suggest only that marijuana must have been lawfully used in this state for the employee to be protected? If that's the case, then the plaintiff in this case would be protected under the statute. Or does in this state modify the phrase lawful use, as stated in the legislative history of NRS 613.333? Again, our plaintiff appellant should prevail if the phrase in the state modifies the word lawful use, because again, the use of marijuana is lawful in this state.
Counsel, can I just, how do we distinguish between the use outside of work? Okay, so clearly you can't just fire someone because they've used marijuana outside of work. From the positive test, like what do we do with that?
Well, I think you have to start to look and see, is there a basis to take the positive test first? But a positive test for marijuana doesn't necessarily mean that somebody is impaired. Marijuana can be measured in certain nanograms and as is consistent with DUI statutes.
So can an employer have a testing scheme that says, hey, if you test positive for marijuana at all, it's zero tolerance?
That's what's been pled in this case, that is Station Casinos. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question. Yeah, that's what's been pled in this case, is that it's either positive or negative at Station Casinos. And if it's positive after you've been employed, then you're fired.
And can an employer have a zero-tolerance policy and still pass muster?
For marijuana, we don't believe so, Your Honor. For other illicit drugs, we believe that may be appropriate, such as cocaine or
what about alcohol? Can they have a zero tolerance? If you 0.01, you're fired, and would that pass muster under this statute?
I think that the test would be if it affected the employee's job, and if the employee had a safety type of a role. The statute itself provides that if the product is legal, you can't be fired for using it off duty.
What do you do with the fact it's federally illegal?
Well, we did argue that preemption does not apply and supported that argument with the law, and even counsel acknowledges that preemption's not a real argument
right,
here.
Right, but just plain reading of the statute, is it lawful when it violates federal law, even though Nevada law would allow it?
I think to reach that conclusion, you have to believe that the Nevada legislators were contemplating federal law when they wrote that statute. And again, the legislative history of that statute provides, the issue there was law enforcement was concerned in the 90s about that statute, and the history stated that if somebody went to California and smoked marijuana and they came back here, would they have those protections? That's why they installed that phrase in this state. So we believe that federal law does not apply here and that the Nevada legislature was not contemplating federal law when they passed that statute. Third, what does workplace policy mean? I think Your Honors have touched upon that. Does workplace policy mean that an employer has the right to govern their employees' conduct basically outside of business? And we believe sometimes it does, subject to certain exceptions. Nevada is an at-will state. So if there's a common law exception to the at-will policy, then we will apply that to the facts. If there's a statutory exception to the at-will policy, as there is here, that should be applied to the facts. Here, the facts were clear that the plaintiff appellant did not have any performance issues. He worked there. There wasn't a performance issue that caused him to get tested. He slipped in a puddle of water that was there through no fault of his own. It's a long recognized rule of statutory construction that where statutes may conflict with each other, the court should do its best to harmonize those statutes with each other. Here, 678D510 can be harmonized with 613.333 by stating that simply an employer cannot test for legal substances that are used at home. Now, getting to the issue that the court wanted briefing on, which is, does the complaint make out a case?
Let me, and I apologize, but I'm struggling a little bit with what you just said. So to the extent somebody is taking prescription medications legally prescribed by a doctor and the employer feels like that's somehow affecting job safety and performance, there would be no ability for them to test for that?
Oh, I may have misstated that, Your Honor. I believe that if any substance is affecting safety or their job performance, depending on the nature of the job, as stated in Hennessy, then the employer surely would have a right to test for that.
So no matter where that substance is used or when, if it's somehow potentially impacting safety or job performance, then they should have the ability to test for it.
I believe they should.
Okay.
I believe they should. I think it's a balance.
Everybody
approach.
Hear that ringing? Or is it
yes.
Yeah.
That's why I make sure it's not me.
Jason's on it.
So,
I have tinnitus, so it's
so if an employer has a policy that if you have an accident on the job or if an accident or injury on the job, you get tested, is there something on its face that would make that improper or subject to liability?
I believe it would if it's for a legal substance and that legal substance did not affect the employee's job. So,
wait, say that again. Sorry, speak up.
So I believe the question was, if the employee slipped and falls, does the employer have carte blanche to basically test the employees? And I don't believe they do. Marijuana is a legal substance in Nevada, and it's clear that simply having marijuana in your system without more than just a positive or negative result doesn't necessarily mean that the person is under the influence.
She's going to the question as to whether he has a right to test for that. Going back to Justice Pickering's question earlier, what if it was alcohol? It's a legal substance, but you're saying you don't feel they have the right to make that choice to test.
Well, I think alcohol is a little different only because you can tell when it was basically consumed. If somebody consumed...
Well, it's just a right to test. That was Justice Kadish's question.
I believe the employer can test. Sure, it's very fact specific. The question is then, under the common law, whether it violates the right of privacy under the Hennessy case. And under the Hennessy case, it's clear that in this situation, applying a balancing test, it would violate the right of privacy. The balancing test was not applied by the respondent in this case. And we believe they didn't do that because application of that test would not result in a decision in their favor. Thank you.
Afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Scott Mahoney. I represent the respondent in this case. I'd like to start off by briefly discussing some of the things that the Nevada legislature has recently done or not done in relation to employees and drug testing. I think that's important for a number of the issues you face in this case, particularly concerning whether any public policy was violated. In 2019, NRS 608.132 was enacted with exceptions. It prohibits employers from failing or refusing to hire someone who has a positive marijuana test. But other than in that instance relating to prospective hires, the legislature has not seen fit to tie the hands of the employers when it comes to drug testing. Drug policies can still include marijuana. Employers are still allowed to currently test current employees for the use of marijuana. There's been no limitations placed on random testing, after accident testing, using saliva testing or urine testing for that matter. There has been no statute passed that expressly prohibits an employer from terminating an employee who tests positive, or a current employee who tests positive for marijuana. There has been no attempt by the legislature to go in and amend NRS 613.333 to state or clarify that the use of marijuana is considered a lawful use of a product for purposes of that statute.
Mr. Mahoney, the legislature hasn't explicitly said the contrary either, is that right? In other words, they haven't explicitly said, yes, an employer can, or have they, said that you can explicitly test for marijuana and you can terminate for a positive test?
As far as using the specific words marijuana, would probably be inclined to agree with you, but I would note that in 2019 also, as part of Chapter 678D in the 510 of that statute, it specifically says that nothing in Chapter 678D is intended to prevent or prohibit employers from maintaining and acting drug testing policies that may ban conduct that would otherwise be permitted under this chapter. So I would say, since that obviously dealt with recreational marijuana, that the intent was there to allow testing, including for marijuana. Well, would have to be for marijuana under that particular statute. That's all it dealt with. Didn't deal with cocaine or heroin or anything like that. So,
Mr. Mahoney,
yes.
If this court were to determine that the district court erred by disposing of this as a matter of federal law, saying it's illegal in the Fed, so yeah, doing that, if we say the court was wrong to do that, would we have to send this matter back down under 613.333 for the court to do a state law analysis applying to this to determine whether or not the use, or as reflected in the positive test, adversely affected his ability to perform his job? I mean, is that what we would have to do if we say that the premise under federal law was faulty?
Well, obviously, I want you to reach the opposite result. But if you did reach that result, yes, by all means. That just allows the case to move forward into discovery, and you know, there still need to be a determination. I mean, the complaint just has allegations at this point. For all we know, the plaintiff smoked a joint half an hour before he walked in. He was impaired. There were signs all over the place, and he fell anyway, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot that remains to be analyzed under 16.333. It's just not the end of the case, even with that result.
And Mr. Mahoney, even if he has a claim under that statute, 613.333, is your position, I take it, that there still could not be a claim under his claim 2 for tortious discharge?
I think it is quite clear, based on this court's precedent, that if you were to find that there is a cognizable 333 claim, that the tortious discharge claim has to be dismissed. There would be a comprehensive statutory remedy. Going back to Valgardson and Gardner, it's been clear that if you have a comprehensive remedy, the court is not going to recognize a tortious discharge. In the Schoen case, you dealt with a similar statute and found that that was a comprehensive remedy. That statute's 50.070. And it's basically identical remedies.
You can't use the common law tort claim to avoid a limited remedy in a statute.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, so based on the two original claims, I know there's the privacy issue, which we can talk about in a bit, but based on the original two claims in the complaint, if you were to allow the 333 to go forward, then the tortious discharge should be affirmed as a matter of law, and that would be the end of that one from our point of view. So the key words in 333 are lawful activity in this state. Importantly, I think the statute does not say lawful activity under the laws of the state of Nevada or similar effect. There's no definition in 333 of what lawful means, and in the absence of a specific definition, words are and phrases are supposed to have their ordinary meaning. I think both sides agree in this case that lawful means in accordance with the law, not prohibited by the law, words to that effect. And I think it's rather elementary that the plaintiff and everyone else in the state of Nevada is subject to a variety of different laws, not just state laws, also federal, local, et cetera, and determine whether something is lawful in this state, whether you or I, anyone else, can use a product lawfully in this state, you have to consider all the laws that apply. And once you do that, everyone, again, is in agreement here that the Controlled Substances Act is still in effect. So I think the district court, as a matter of federal law, properly considered federal law in making the determination that no lawful activity occurred. Going to the privacy issues that was raised in the order asking for supplemental briefing, to answer a couple of the court's technical questions in that order.
Can I interrupt you before you get into that?
Of course,
and ask you to step back from the court's order and tell me from your perspective where, if ever, was the right to privacy raised at the district court level?
It was not. In fact, I noted in our supplemental brief that the word privacy does not even appear in the complaint. I know that Nevada is obviously a liberal notice pleading state, but you do at least have to state the elements of the claims. You have to do something, and I think that's particularly important here when you're talking about tortious discharge, because the court has been very reluctant over the decades to find exceptions to at-will employment based on tortious discharge. So if you're going to argue for a new form of tortious discharge, I would submit that you have to be fairly careful in spelling out exactly what the public policy is, and simply take the words in the complaint that there's a tortious discharge because there was a statutory violation of Chapter 678, and all of a sudden to say, well, that really means invasion of privacy, I don't think that's appropriate. Now, you also asked whether the complaint could be sent back down if it doesn't adequately state a tortious discharge claim based on privacy. It could be sent back down with instructions to the district court to allow amendment of the complaint. But I would submit that that would be futile in this case, and that there would just be another motion to dismiss that, in our view, should be granted. In the Anderson case, this court recognized a tortious discharge in the privacy context where there was evidence that an employee had been discharged after she refused to disclose her medical condition to her coworkers, as had been requested by her boss. I think almost everyone in the state could agree that well, first of all, there's not a statute that I'm aware of or public policy I'm aware of in this state that suggests that requiring employees to disclose confidential information to coworkers is a good idea. It's a policy of this state. So I think it was fairly easy and appropriate for this court to reach the conclusion that that could be an exception to that falls within tortious discharge. But, you know, when it comes to drug testing, you know, to say that it's against Nevada public policy to allow employees to drug test, you know, that's a completely different matter. As I said at the outset, I think the legislature has made it pretty clear, even with its recent enactments, that that it's overall it's fine with the idea of drug testing. This court, in some of its prior precedents, including the Holmes decision, Blankenship, has also noted that Nevada public policy is consistent with drug testing. So to find a tortious discharge based on privacy in the drug testing context, I just don't see the basis to find a public policy. And even if the court were to determine that it's now a violation of public policy to terminate someone for a positive drug test, you're still left with the question of, well, there's a policy violation, but is that going to be one of those policy violations, one of those rare and exceptional cases where we're going to make an exception to the at-will doctrine? And I would go back again to the Valgardson case many years ago. And in that case, obviously Nevada has a statute against age discrimination. Age discrimination is against public policy, but Valgardson said, well, it's clearly against our public policy, but is it going to be something that's going to warrant an exception to at-will employment and allow for a tortious discharge claim? The court said no. So I would submit that if the court is not going to recognize tortious discharge claims in the area of employment discrimination, that it probably is not going to and should not recommend or recognize such a tortious discharge just because someone has an accident and then tests positive for marijuana and is fired. Finally, I'd like to talk briefly about the Hennessy case, since that was mentioned in the order. I think our situation, Hennessy, is quite distinguishable. That dealt with a random drug test. This deals with post-accident testing. That dealt with a urine test where the sample was gathered with an observer present. Here we're talking about a saliva test. Also, there was no indication, as in the Hennessy case here, that when Quest Diagnostics reports back to to Pallas Station, all it says is you test positive or negative for a particular substance. There's no indication that it was also disclosing blood work and other diseases or ailments or anything else. So I think Hennessy is very distinguishable, but the most important distinguishing factor of Hennessy is there was no indication in that decision that you had the kind of legislative pronouncements that you have in this case. Final thing I would say, if I can squeeze it in here, is there's been a lot of discussion about, well, if the legislature had intended to do this, it would have done so. Let me just point out, because it hasn't been addressed by anyone, that 633 not only deals with discharge situations, but also with failure or refusal to hire. And I would just make the observation that if only Nevada law was to be considered for purposes of 333, then why would there have been a need to enact 608.132, because that already covers pre-employment situations. I'm out of time, unless there's any questions. Thank you for your attention, Your Honor.
Colleagues, any questions?
Thank you very much.
I just addressed a couple of points. First, appellant does not agree that he does not have a tortious discharge claim, even under the statute that was pled in the original complaint. When we talk about a comprehensive scheme, there are damages that are available in employment discrimination cases that are also available in common law claims, particularly pain and suffering. So you can recover pain and suffering damages in employment discrimination cases. You cannot recover pain and suffering in the statute at issue here. Secondarily, and I'll jump to the privacy issue that was raised by the court later in this rebuttal. However, on the issue of lawful use, again, I think counsel is respectfully ignoring lawful use in this state. And that's the difference between the Colorado case that the lower court relied upon as opposed to, because in that statute there was no in this state modifier. Now, on to the point of the right to privacy not appearing anywhere within the complaint, we do cite the Liston case that provides that notice pleading does not require the party to even correctly identify the cause of action, so long as the facts would ultimately support that cause of action. And I think the court recognized that in the order because the court noted that the appellant was intensely interrogated, took him to a holding cell where he was forced to take an alcohol test or lose his job, which was performed orally via a mouth swab. And if you're going to analyze this case in light of Hennessy, you have to take a close look at Hennessy. Hennessy provides that public policy, as this court has long recognized, can be dictated by either the Constitution, the common law, and statutory expressions of public policy. In Hennessy, the New Jersey Supreme Court identified search and seizure and inalienable rights as a basis of a constitutional right or expression of public policy with respect to privacy. Nevada has those exact same sections in its own constitution. The common law has long in Nevada recognized the right to privacy, and we do again have statutory expressions of privacy, as we've previously explained. Now, finally, I think it's mischaracterizing the appellant's argument to say that we believe that all drug testing violates a person's right to privacy. We have not made that argument. This case involves a limited circumstance of marijuana, and that's what we're arguing. We're not trying to expand that claim at all. I think at the end of the day, what did the appellant plaintiff do wrong? He followed the law. He consumed marijuana in his home. And the respondent may want to speculate as to facts that are not in the record, because we're right now just bound by the complaint. But he followed the law. He consumed marijuana in his home. He slipped and fell at work, did not make a claim, was forced into the holding area to take a test. Those are the facts that we're dealing with here. If there are other issues later, then we can come back and address those if need be. I'm open to any questions.
So, Mr. Walgamarsino, your first claim for relief in the complaint is as to the statute, right? And your second claim is for tortious discharge. And it alleges that it was violation of public policy to terminate plaintiff for engaging in a statutorily protected activity, i.e. the use of marijuana, right? So
yes.
That's what he says is his claim.
Yes.
It's not alleged that he refused or resisted taking the test.
That's correct.
Okay. And the termination wasn't for any resistance or argument about whether it's appropriate to take a test or not take a test.
That is correct.
Okay.
He was terminated for having marijuana in his system.
Right.
Any other questions, Your Honors?
Any other questions? Sure. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Counsel, thank you for the arguments today. The matter will stand submitted. The court stand in recess until tomorrow morning.